Commander Murray, Reel 3.
There was no flak going on, or searchlights in the area. And I did recognise the Klutz yard. And I did a bombing run and managed to get a, you know, drop the bombs on the Klutz target. As soon as I did that, all hell broke loose. So they were obviously trying to keep quiet, hoping that no one would find Klutz and everyone would go to the dummy, if you see what I mean. But as soon as they got that target, all hell went loose. Luckily me, for me, one of the members of the squadron was behind me and he bombed on the flames that I'd started, so that at least two aircraft hit it. There was... I did everything I could to get out of that flak that night. Diving, I finished up from whatever, 22,000 feet or whenever time we bombed, and by the time we got down to about 12, I really had thrown everything, all my experience, and I couldn't do anything. And I actually wept at that time. Not for me, but for betraying the crew. I really thought we'd had it. And I was an experienced operational pilot, you know. And everything I knew didn't seem to work. And I remember actually crying. And then all went quiet. And that was not a pleasant experience.
So how did you get out of it in the end?
I managed to... They gave up. Or I got out of range of them or something like that. Anyway, the firing ceased and... I flew back low level.
Was that in Manchester?
That was in a, I think that was in a Lancaster, because we were flying Lancs. I can't remember, to tell you the truth. I just can't remember. It would have been a Manchester. I could tell you if I looked. Well, I can
we
tell
have
you
a look at, yes? If you can continue just going through the logbook and reading out the targets that you had.
I can't remember where I'd got to tell you the truth.
I think up to that page where you are now.
Here, was it?
Yes.
July... Because of the trouble with the Manchester... We were having to go back on occasions to Hampden's. So on the July the 14th, I was bombing Hanover in a Hampden. July the 24th, Hampden, Kiel.
How did you feel about going back to the Hampden's?
Well, a bit depressed, because this wonderful new aeroplane, which we thought was going to do so much to help win the war, was being a bit of a flop. July the 27th, mining Lorient in the hand. Then August the 7th, back to Manchester's, bombing Essen. And I had tail flutter, and I bombed Duisford.
Duisburg?
Duisburg, that's it, yeah. Which must be an alternative or a closer one or something. August 28th, Duisburg. Successful, and then on this I got searchlight belt scheme carried out. That's the thing I was talking about. So September 11th, Rostock, 4,000 pounders. That's Manchester. We're back on Manchester's now. September the 29th, Hamburg. October the 13th, Manchester's Cologne. November the 7th, Manchester's. We're back on Manchester's. Ops to Cologne again, successful. January the 2nd, 42, Saint-Nazaire. Ten-tenths cloud, bombs jettisoned, so that wasn't successful. January the 9th, Brest. January 25th, Brest.
Was this still Manchester's?
MS Manchester's. And the Lancaster's coming in. I see I did a night flying test on a Lank. And local on a Lank. Oh yes, that was the prototype Lancaster, I remember. I did some local flying, BT-308. That was a delightful aeroplane because it was a Manchester. And they'd extended the wings, put the four Merlins in. And instead of the two throttles, the extra two for the two additional engines were just two pipes, lead pipes or whatever, you know. So very much. And it flew beautiful. It was terrifically fast because it had no turrets in or no bomb load, no bomb equipment, you know, war equipment. So it was a lovely fighter. So then you could fly it with the inside engines cut out and in steep turns. And it really was a great tonic after the Manchester. Then 25th, Manchester, Brest. Successful. February the 12th, Daylight Ops, battleships. Oh, yes, that was when the Scharnhorst Niners and I came out of Brest. But I had to return. I had a hydraulic leak almost just after takeoff. So I was probably rather fortunate in that I couldn't carry on because I didn't even enough to open the bomb doors.
So you didn't attack the battlecruisers?
I didn't, no.
Where were you flying from then? Still from Waddington?
That would be Waddington, yeah. February the 25th, 42 Ops, Manchester returned. I don't know why it would be probably engine trouble. 27th February, Ops, Kiel, unsuccessful. March the 3rd, all these Manchesters, Ops, Renault, works in Paris, successful. And on the 8th, Krupps again, Essen.
So that might have been the occasion that you described when you were coned.
Could well have been, March the 8th.
So that was March.
March the 8th, Krupps, Essen. Whether that was that incident, I'm afraid I don't know. And then we're on to a lot of Lancaster flying. And then because we were converting onto Lancs, And the next date I've got is, yes, that was where we were converting under Lenks. The next one I got is May the 2nd, Ops Mining Gdynia, Danzig. And that was in Lancaster.
So that's when you started Lancaster operations, yeah. In May.
Mm. And I got unsuccessful, dropped at North Silt. Chimney Weather.
It looks from your logbook as though you only did one or two operations on Lancasters,
yeah.
In May 1942, and then did a lot of training on it.
Yes. In fact, I formed, by then we had a CO, so I was once again a flight commander. And I formed a training flight as an appendage of 207 Squadron to train the crews on the aircraft as they came to join the squadron.
Can we talk about what it was like flying the Lancaster now, please?
Yeah.
Can you tell me what it was like?
It was not as positive as the Manchester, but it was a very easy aeroplane to fly. It was in a way very similar to the old Avro Anson. In it's a very forgiving aeroplane. And as I say, not quite as sensitive to fly as the Manchester, but it was a good, safe aeroplane without any vices at all. A bit heavy on the controls, but quite nice. And of course had a much better performance, which was rather enjoyable.
So how did you come to leave that squadron 207, I think in September?
We're at September. We went to Bottisford, and that's where we moved from RAF Waddington in November 41 and went to Bottisford to September 42. And during that latter part of that period, I was, finished operations and was commanding this training flight because there weren't any training units specifically to convert people onto Lancasters at the time. They came later. And then on the 7th of September, I returned to Waddington, commanding what was called 9 Con Flight, that's number nine conversion flight, which was again was training people from Manchester's onto Lancaster's.
And then
I carried the same task. They formed a proper conversion unit at Winthorpe, which is near Waddington, called 1661 Conversion Unit, and I took my flight and joined it within that organisation.
Now, can we go on to when you joined your third operational squadron, 138, in 44?
Yeah.
Because I think that was a special duties squadron.
Yeah. See, we're getting on towards the end of the war, if you remember this. November 44, my first operation. I joined it 8th November 44. I'd been working at headquarters Bomber Command. And I was offered the command of 138 Squadron which was one of the Tempsford cloak and dagger squadrons. And our masters primarily were SOE. The other squadron, 161, operated primarily for SIS, but we took on each other's targets as and when required. My task wasn't an easy one because Bomber Harris wanted 138 Squadron back in the main force before the end of the war, because he just wanted to have all his, you know, originally it was a bomber squadron put on the cloak and dagger, and he wanted it back, so that, I don't know. So my task was to be prepared to keep the morale going and make those chaps happy that they're going to go back into the main force, which they obviously wouldn't be, you know, because they felt themselves very superior doing cloak and dagger work. So it wasn't an easy task. However, it didn't happen immediately, thank goodness. When I got there, we were flying Stirlings. The morale was very low. No one had survived a tour of operations in the squadron. No one knew of anyone who'd survived a tour. If you see what I mean? Immediately, and I wasn't entitled to do it, I had two crews who'd done 26 sorties. And I immediately tour expired them, although it wasn't within my province to do so. I'd never heard anything else, anything from higher authority about it. That had immediate effect on morale. We were losing an awful lot. We were operating over Denmark and Norway, and losing a lot of casualties over Denmark. We operated in the moonlight periods, dropping onto these reception people with torches and things like that. The other thing I did after I'd been there a short time and was able to assess the thing, I expressly forbid anyone to fly above 400 feet over Denmark. In fact, that meant they had to climb up to drop. Immediately, our casualties went down to almost zero. So I'm rather proud of that.
Was that because of flak?
It was flak and fighters. Fighters, I think, probably more than flak. They used to... There's an airfield called Ford Airfield in Denmark. And in the end, when I was flying across it at 400 feet. But they'd intercept us with a Focke-Wulf 190. And the Focke-Wulf would have to dive down, and we used to try and dive down and come up underneath. And the damn things used to fly into the ground because we were so low. So in the end, we felt pretty well immune from them. And as far as the cumbersome aeroplane, but the Stirling is very manoeuvrable. Very quick, immediate aileron control. So, the other, I suppose, interesting thing, we got a chap from the resistance movements in Denmark, and they were able to get back through Sweden. Fly back in a Mosquito. And at head of the resistance there came and gave us a lecture, and they were suffering very high casualties on the ground, and he said, I remember, say, please, gentlemen, no circlings, because people would tend to look for the DZ, which would be a narrow line of torches and an L shape sort of thing, which was probably in a clearing in a wood or something. And they'd circle looking for it. Well, that alerted the ground forces. So a lot of the people on the ground were lost due to that. So what we did after that was to fly over it. When we saw the DZ, the torches, we go over a few miles away and circle like mad over there, then come back and drop on one pass sort of thing. And that cut the casualties, we're told, down quite a lot. But they were very brave, those people.
What kind of aircraft were you flying?
That was a Stirling, which was very good for dropping, because it had 22 points, you know, bomb carrier points. So we carried a vast number of containers. The containers, I think, were about 250 pounds, long tubular things, and they break up into individual packs of about 50 pounds, which they could, you know, manhandle quite quickly on the ground. We used to get, eventually, reports back on the success of our operations, which meant that you couldn't pretend you'd hit a target, because they, you know, I remember my worst target was, they got it back, but I was 12,000 metres out. Which is, as I was a squadron commander, I was. The trouble is that the Germans introduced very severe blackouts, and of course the Danish farmers, because it was a German order, refused to obey. And a farm sort of midden can look very much like a DZ, you know, lights. And I'm afraid I got inveigled off dropping this load in the manure heap in the middle of a farm. But they got it okay. Another occasion I remember, I found the DZ in a wood. I'd done my circling, and I was coming up to drop. We dropped agents and containers, of course. And along a roadside, a couple of fields off, was a whole string of lorries, which were pretty obviously military, you know. And a car bouncing along a track across these fields, full view of the convoy on the road, headlights full on. So I immediately aborted. And eventually got the report back with abject apologies from the doctor, who's late. And it was him who was driving his car to join the reception. Brave devils, aren't they, with his headlights full on, full view of everything, but dashing there to get there on time. So.
Did you have much to do with the agents that you were dropping?
Yes, there was a place called Station 61 where they were trained, which was fairly close to Thamesford. And it had been the tradition when I arrived, and I went to one or two to have parties over there with them and the trainers, the people training them. But I'm afraid I put a stop to that. One of the first things I did, because I reckon it was a security lapse. I knew that if I'd been shot down and they were twisting my ghoulies or doing whatever they were going to do, I couldn't rely on myself not to spill the beans. And the less you knew, the greater the security. Yeah. And it was unnecessary. It was good for morale to meet them, but it was completely unnecessary, and I think a dangerous break in security, because you can't expect people not to give in under torture. No. I don't know if I would have given in, but I would, you know. I'd be much happier if I didn't know. The only other contact is that we met them at a farmhouse on the middle of the airfield where they were all dressed up. And we sort of saluted each other and shook hands and all the rest of it. And went out to the aircraft with them.
What did you get to know about the agents in the period before you put a stop to this socialising?
Nothing very much, except where I knew where the place was. And we just had parties and talked. They didn't talk very much. They were quite a colourful bunch, particularly the people training. But I just thought it was unnecessary. We had some very good parties in the bar, sort of thing.
In what way were they colourful?
Well, they were odd people, those SOE people, a lot of them. They used to dress up in disguises and things. One chap dressed up as a, I don't know, Chinese general or something and came to inspect the place, and he took them all in. You know, they really believed it was true. They do things like that, you know. Good training, I suppose. But they were, you know, picturesque people.
But this place where they had the parties was called Station 61?
Station 61, as I remember, yeah. It's in my memory, it's Station 61, so I'm pretty certain that's what it was.
And that was nearby?
I haven't got it written down anyway.
That was nearby?
It was fairly near Thamesford. I don't think I'd be able to find it now.
What did Station 61 consist of?
It was an old country house with numerous Nissen huts and things like that. Didn't see a lot of it, because we always went there at night, you see. But you went through a driveway into a country house, there were Nissen huts and various things around the place.
Were the agents all men?
No.